Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Hello and welcome to the 5th annual Sci-Fi Party Line Turd Off.
Yay.
This is your there he comes in with the yay. This is Carl's favorite time of the year.
Why she makes me do this? I do not know why, people. The suffering.
So let me tell you how this all started. It started with the M. Night film, and
right away, you know, only good can come after that line. Only the best comes after M. Night. Yes.
So the Sci-Fi annual, 5th annual Turd Show is a thing we do every year since 5 years ago, and it started with the M. Night film in Skyline. We were so outraged by those two films in that year that we decided that, you know, we always see a really terrible films at least once. It's something just really like, how did that get money? How did that get passed anyone? And so at the end of the year, after we've seen a majority of these films, because we can't see them all, we pick out the best of the worst ones and decide which one was the absolute stinker.
It's not easy, people. This is not easy, because your natural reflex is to avoid those movies when you see them in the theater. You try to steer clear of them. Every once in a while, we are surprised. Horrified might be the more appropriate term, but surprised that a movie that we thought was going to be good has gone completely off of the rails, and that's a very special category in and of its own. But so, yes, the Turd Off is sort of us bringing together the fine motion pictures that we have seen over the year and analyzing the ones that are the worst.
Now Carl has come up with a very scientific criteria.
It's scientific.
Of very scientific how this breaks down, and so we're gonna break them down for you right now, and then we'll break them down later, because we always like that he changes his definitions every year.
I
so you gotta saying. Work with it.
I keep saying.
No, you change. So the first one is squandered effects.
Yes.
The second one is acting, question mark.
Acting? It's question mark.
Turdage per dollar. Yeah. Oh, that's my favorite. Mm. Fury upon exit. Oh, I have one that made me really furious. And I couldn't leave. So there's that. And then which sequel would offend the least? Now we gave you a chance to participate this year, and what we did was put all of the kind of genre films and just let you choose which ones you thought were terrible. So not all of them, like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxies was on this list, but of course it wasn't a turd to the majority of people.
Okay.
But it was just on a list just in case. I wanted to give people freedom, you know, because this is America. We do that. So I'm just going to, can I briefly, Carl, should I briefly read down the list of what's all on here?
Why don't you do the top five?
The top five of that people thought were turds?
That's right. The voted top five.
Okay. So now what I'd like to do is the voted period, just to see what was there, and I won't read like all of the films, just like the ones that got votes, because a lot of them didn't get votes. So this is your least offensive, and that was Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I got one vote. Maleficent, Expendables, The Congress, Dracula Untold, Interstellar, someone voted for. Mockingjay, Snowpiercer, Sin City.
Why anybody would have put Snowpiercer on there? I'm offended by this.
I said, look, these are all the films. People vote for what they feel. Okay? Mm-hmm. People are free to feel.
They may have accidentally pressed that button when they were trying to reach for something else.
So those are those that, you know, one person voted for those, not a big deal. So this one got two votes, and that is Divergent. Godzilla got three votes. So did The Signal and Lucy and The Maze Runner. Those got three votes.
Shame on you, Lucy people. Shame on you, Lucy people.
I heard it was a terrible film, but whatever. And so for four votes, you get I, Frankenstein, five votes for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, six votes for Transcendence. Wow. Seven votes for RoboCop, and the top turd of the year, according to you people, is Transformers 4, Age of Extinction.
Wow.
So I think people are kind of astute this year in their choices, and are aware of kind of how we vote, because it might not be far off. I know one year they were way off, but this year, you know. So there was a few on there that we did. I think Carl and I, we're just going to talk briefly about some of the films that I made him watch. The first one
can we just talk about The Mutually Assured Destruction?
Because
we need to get that off the table right away.
Okay, go ahead. Tell him, Carl.
We are doing a civic duty by watching some of these motion pictures. Granted, we went to some willingly and then were horrified at the result. But then there were some that we just knew ahead of time. We just, this is not going to be a good experience. Kat and I, for years, we've teased each other. We've tried to sneak in, a bad one where, you know, I'll be like, how's this movie? And she'll be like, oh, it's good. You want to go see it? And I'll go there and I'll be like, son of a, she got me. She got me on the movie, right? So, you know, so that's kind of how occasionally we will spring a turd on one another, and that's, you know, how we go. Well, okay, look, this year there were a couple of movies that came out there, and we couldn't even do it to each other. We looked at it and we're like, no. One such fine motion picture this year, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I couldn't do it, folks. No. I'm sorry. Could not bring myself to see it, and I was waiting to get needled by Kat. You know, I thought she was going to try, and she was mighty silent. The year was rolling on. I was like, oh, I know she's going to try to get me with Teenage Mutant. Silence. And then finally, you know, it was getting nigh on a week before the show. I was like, Kat, aren't you going to? She's like, no, I don't want to see it. You know what? I don't want to see it. I'm not going to make you see it. I don't want to see it. So we have a detente / mutually assured destruction for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We couldn't do it, folks. We just couldn't do it. So that's not on the list. I'm sorry for anyone if that disappoints you. That's one. What else? Is there something else we decided on yet?
Well, we just didn't get around to The Maze Runner, which I heard that we should probably see.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem just like all the... We already did... what's the one with the silver cars from last year?
The host or something.
Yeah, come on, y'all. Yeah. We did that already.
Yeah.
We
were just, yeah, it's like, I mean, the guy I'll watch host. It because, you know, Hanako was like, you gotta watch this, Kat. And I was just like, fine, because I already watched Divergent, so whatever. Okay. So we didn't watch The Maze Runner. We'll, I guess, get around to it, but it won't be in this year either. And a few others that we didn't see was something called The Congress. Yes, sir.
No, I was just saying, I didn't even know what that was. I saw it.
Well, it was on a list, and it was just kind of, I wasn't really sure, but it was listed as sci-fi, but I was just like, I'm out of time, whatever. I'm not going to torture Carl this year, except for one that I tortured him with. We'll get into that. Dracula Untold, we didn't see.
That's right. Yes, now it's coming back to me. I forgot about that one. Wow.
There was a horror one called Extraterrestrial that I didn't force Carl to see, mainly because I kind of didn't want to see it either. Let's see. I think those are the one. You saw Transcendence, yes?
Yes, I did. I did see Transcendence.
Okay. So, you know, there's a few of them not on this list. Some years, I mean, there's always ones that we didn't see, but to me, it just seems like there's a lot of little independent things that are listed kind of sci-fi and sci-fi adjacent. Like, you know, Expendables is on this list, not necessarily sci-fi, but, you know, they have like a lot of our favorite sci-fi actors. So it's a little crossover there. So it doesn't, like, Expendables 3 wouldn't qualify as a turd because there's not a spaceship or an alien or anything like that in there. But, you know, we just want to hear if you hated it or loved it or whatever, just, you know, for S&G.
All right.
Yeah, well, so Carl, now before we get into the final list and the final breaking down of the criteria, there was a film that we wanted to see that we had been hearing about and we just didn't get around to it until recently. I twisted Carl's arm to watch. I really thought he'd be excited to watch this without any arm twisted, and it was Automata.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I watched this and I don't know, I fell in love with it. It had a level of grittiness that I really appreciated. It had, like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's the Blade Runner vibe and blah, blah. This one really kind of was dirty and Blade Runner vibe-ish. You know what I'm saying? So I like that about it. I like that it was really different. The message wasn't different. We've heard this type of message before, but I think to me it was just the grittiness in it and the It just felt a little different, and because it was a bit low budget, it kind of endeared me to it. So, I mean, it had some great actors in it that I really enjoyed. It wasn't painful to watch. And what was it, Antonio Banderas?
Antonio Banderas, yes.
Right. So
Melanie Griffith was in it.
Right.
Dylan McDermott was in this movie.
Right. Yes. And it was just so gorgeous. So I'll let Carl explain it to you, and we'll get to see what our robot friend has to say about this film. So go ahead.
Yeah. A budget of $7 to $15 million, depending upon who you ask. And this is clearly a foreign made film, okay? Because you could just feel it, folks. I joke about it a lot, but you can feel the influence of the foreignness in this film. I'll say this: I was impressed with what they were able to achieve with their budget. They really, really did pull off a Blade, and in my opinion, too much of a Blade Runner riff, because it really, really felt like instead of the flying spinners, they were just driving down the street, though. People had their raggedy plastic bag outfits on. It really, they really, really managed to capture the Blade Runner vibe, but the problem is they were just about $2 million short on the budget. There are moments where, okay, all right, so how you want to do this? You want to talk about the story?
We can talk about it a little bit. You know, I don't want to wear you out on it, but I really wanted to hear what you have to say about this, because it had, what, two of the three main robot rules, and I was like, where's the third one, or isn't there a third one, or I forgot how many rules there were. But I felt the foreignness, which, of course, I said before, I appreciate it. But I didn't mind the low budget. It didn't seem, I mean, the plastic bag thing that you talked about, it was fine. You know, I think for what it was fine. We will talk about it in a linear fashion, because there's a baby that I'd like to mention.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So, all right. So, inconsistent use of effects is one of my complaints with Automata, because, okay, the opening half of this movie is set in a Blade Runner city type environment. You got the holograms over the city, you got the cop cars driving down the street, you got the gritty people and all, everything really, the super crowded post-apocalyptic, you know, burnt out cyberpunk world, they managed to capture all of that really, really well. With the core of this movie being about robots, what they do with the actual physical robots needed a little help. Okay, it just falls a little short in terms of the practical effects with the robots. And so I'm gonna say,
well, like, what do you mean? Because I don't.
Okay,
really...
What do I mean? Perfect example. What's the girl robot name in this movie? I can't remember. All right, so
she was a sex bot. I forgot her name.
One of the prime robots in this movie is a sex bot, and she comes out in the city, just like what's her name did in Blade Runner. It once again, but she does not look hot like the android from Blade Runner. This thing looks
However,
like.
I think she knew what she was doing because you walk in the room and all of a sudden you hear on loop. And I was just like, what's happening here? Because.
Yeah, that was not selling it for me. Did not find that sensual at all. Excuse me. But okay, so here's the thing. So she's unveiled to the audience as this sex bot, right? She steps out and she's got this clunky. She really, really looks like someone disassembled a crash test dummy and mixed it with a store mannequin, right? And the parts aren't really where they ought to be. I'm just gonna say, when you're looking at the female form, and you are expecting there to be a sex bot, you know, let's just say women have curves in a very natural place. And minimally, if you're just the basic form of a woman, even if it's a plastic kind of version, you expect there to be those curves. Well, these cyborg chicks in this movie have like a big old printer right in the middle of them. Just right, and there's, you know, there's coax cables and RCA jacks in the middle and a hole in the center. I mean, and not where it's supposed to be. I mean, look, you know what I'm saying? Right, I mean, right clean through them. So, okay, so now, so why does this matter? All right, well, who cares, right? There are these moments where we are supposed to be either titillated by the android, or we're supposed to be really feeling her femininity or naturalness coming out. There's a moment where Antonio Banderas, in a toe-up radioactive imposed moment, is supposed to be dancing with the android. And what happens, because he puts his arms around her, and they're
Cleo.
Doing this. Thank you, Cleo. He puts his arms around Cleo, and there's this moment, and On one level, and this is a testament to Automata, on one level, I could feel what they were trying to do.
Me too.
I said, okay, you know, they're both lost. They're not sure they're going to make it out of this. He's drunk and irradiated. Who knows how this is going to go? And so there's this supposed to be tender moment where they are slow dancing together. But man, yeah, because of the practical, it really looks like he's holding a mannequin, and I'm trying to get around the slow, clunky motion of it, and it's just, and she's not very attractive, so I'm trying to combat, and it's not in a moment like that, you're torn between the emotion of what they're trying to bring out in the story and the cartoony, clunky nature of what you are actually seeing on the film, and it's frustrating. It's hard to reconcile that, and that happens again.
You were frustrated, Carl.
Oh, I was frustrated. Yeah,
me say that I'm disappointed at your frustration, because
sorry.
I think that this film, the robots themselves, it's just like people. All people aren't really perfect, and sometimes you need to look past like the cosmetic to really get inside the head of what's going on. So yeah, she was clunky in a way. I don't know what type of female robot you find sexy, but I mean, she was a female, you know, moderately attractive or whatever, and it was more about her attitude.
Where moderately? Nothing was natural looking on her at all, anywhere.
Okay, that's fine, because it's a robot, and I appreciated that about it, because it was more, you were drawn into her sad story and how she was just, I mean, the guy didn't even walk up properly, and then all of a sudden she's moaning on loop, you know, and it was just like, it was kind of depraved and sad in a way, and then
I think the very thing that
got me is that when, you know, we talk about her and Antonio Banderas looking, I mean, dancing together, and they're really out of it, and there's the slow music playing, and then, you know, she falls back to her programming with the moaning on loop when before that they were having a touching and deep conversation, and they were trying, they were like almost getting to a point to where they understood each other, man versus robot, her and her almost sentience and whatever. But then she fell back on her programming and it took him out of it. And so I just thought that was very well done and directed.
Yes.
And in that, but I mean, I guess I can be attracted to like a male predator or like a freaking Cylon, and it's just because of their attitudes or whatever. And I don't know. I didn't find her unattractive, but I'm not a man, or I'm not, you know, attracted to women, so I don't know how that was supposed to for you.
The problem is, in any time you're doing science fiction, if you don't get the effects quite right, you're going to lose a lot of the audience because they're going to make fun of it. They're going to look past the message.
Well, are you trying to look at this from the view of how someone else will look at it? Or did you appreciate it? You said you couldn't really get past her clunkiness, but you already went in and we already had a lot of buildup knowing that this is a low budget film. So I think perhaps you could have overlooked that.
All right, Your Honor, I'm trying to tell you if you let me finish. So one of the first things that I said is, inconsistency, right? The whole first half of this movie manages to really nail special effects. How can you build on a huge city, a post-apocalyptic city, vistas, they got the lighting right, they got the special effects, the clunky sort of asynchronous technology. In other words, you're set in the future, yet you got dot matrix printers. You remember how they did that with Blade Runner 2, though? So they met, and it meshed. All of that sort of felt right. So all of that, the time and the effort and the building that they did to create that, and then when we've got the intimate moments where it's just dude in the desert with a robot.
It seemed like in the second half of the film, like as filming went on, they ran out of money, so they just took it to the freaking desert.
I'm just saying that is kind of, if you're going to set me up with one level of effect, then don't, you know, cheap out on it later on. That's kind of jarring. Or if you've got the budget to pull off the whole first half, here's what you do: cut half of that out. In the beginning, don't spend the money on that, and give me just a little bit more elegance in your machine. So what I'm saying is, folks that are going into this movie and are trying to give it a shot, they're going to have a little problem with the quality of the physical robots in this. There are some people that, and I went in this and I knew it was low budget, and then all of a sudden I'm exposed to these vistas and holograms and beautiful scenes in the beginning. I'm like, oh, wow, this maybe it's not going to be such a low budget. And they're trying to draw me in a little bit more with the emotional story. You know, it's a father and he's getting too old for this shit. You know, it's the same, you know, the story where I just need to get out of here. So, okay, I got it. Okay, I can see where they're going with that, and then we're taken to sort of a clunkier version, and then it ramps back up because what, like you said, you're talking about the baby, right? But okay, all right, so let me just for those who haven't seen it, just to give you a quick, super quick overview, this is your standard anime cyberpunk post-apocalyptic android story. Okay, so what's happening is a major corporation in the future, Robotics Corporation, builds a set of androids to try to defeat climate change. You've got the arc where, yay, everybody sees the androids and they're happy about the androids coming up. The androids are going to save society. Unfortunately, their efforts were not successful. They were not able to stop the apocalyptic climate change that ends up wiping out 90% of the human populace. But during that failure, humanity, in effect, turns on the robots. They're disappointed with the outcome. This says, oh, we knew we shouldn't have trusted those machines in the first place.
We've seen all of this.
Like in anime and Blade Runner. We've seen this whole arc before. So, you know, hey, to see it embodied in a physical, in a live action movie is kind of an interesting change. But look, if you're going to do that, I'm going to need you to follow through on the effects. But anyway, so that's the story. So Antonio Banderas.
Man, you are a hard grader.
Like I said, we've seen it so many times before. If you're going to do it right. So Antonio Banderas plays Jacques Vacon. And he is an insurance adjuster for this giant robotics firm. His job is sort of go door to door if these robots malfunction and try to evaluate the situation to make sure it wasn't the robot's fault or not. So his job is just sort of go door to door, make sure these robots are doing wherever he's called. He goes in there to see how the robots are doing, and if they malfunction, he awards the family. If it's not the robot's fault, he calls back home and goes, these people are just abusing their kid. It wasn't the robot's fault. Okay, so we see. But of course, something goes awry. And a trend starts developing where these robots are starting to express behaviors that are outside of the parameters of what his experience as a robot insurance adjuster, which is quite possibly one of the most interesting premises you can have. He doesn't hunt them down like a Blade Runner. Nah, he just kind of drops off receipts is what he does. So, yes, robot insurance adjuster to be totally different from what Harrison Ford was doing in Blade Runner.
I'm just gonna
let it go.
Man. That element is in there.
Really, I didn't see it all. I didn't see it at all. I don't know what you know. So anyway, so there is this creeping convergence of these robots' behavior coming out, and he doesn't care. He just wants to get to the beach. He wants to retire. His wife is home and is pregnant, about to give birth. He's really interested in just getting out of the scene, and so he's had enough of this when he starts to experience these robots manifesting behaviors that are very, very unusual, including self-sacrifice, which he sees as being very unrobot-like.
No, that was suicide, not self-sacrifice.
Well, the reason I say that is because we get the impression that the robots don't want the humans to know what's happening to them. They don't want the humans to figure out what's
going on. That they can repair themselves.
Right.
Because that was
So rather than be questioned, in the back of the trailer, the robot sees that he's cornered. There's nothing. He's not going to be able to get away. He sacrifices himself by burning himself up, and he thinks that that's going to happen. So that's what I meant. And, of course, we see it later in the movie as well, but I'm trying to be subtle. So anyway, needless to say, the Robotics Corporation ain't thrilled about what's going on, and there is a secret that comes out later in the movie as to why they are so, so concerned about these robots manifesting these unusual behaviors. So what they do is they partner up our buddy Antonio Jacques with this other dude. His name's Wallace. Now, Wallace is a crankier dude. And he's just not real interested.
He's the Carl of the thing.
Okay, see? He's not real interested in exploring the possibilities of robotic sentience. So anytime something seems a little off, a little awry, he just descends on it and blows him away, and that's kind of how he answers all of the questions. And he reports more directly to the honchos back at the headquarters. Long story short, Antonio Banderas finds himself in the care of a raggedy team of these robots that are dragging themselves. And I mean, look, that's all I'm going to say. That's exactly what they are. They are a ragtag, raggedy team of these robots that have managed to try to escape from the city. They're dragging him as well because, some of the guys that were determined that these robots are becoming self-aware kind of think maybe Jacques Antonio has something to do with it. So they try to kill him and chase him out there. The robots save him, and they drag him out further into the desert.
Into the irradiated desert.
Yeah, good idea, guys. Did you read an anatomy book or something? Anyway, to try to escape the guys that were killing Antonio. And so that's where we start to see I'm not going to say humanity. Let's just say the new emotional side of the robots, and they're interacting with Antonio, and they're talking about going to New Vertiform City, or they're going to they're going to Zion, or they're going to whatever you want to call it.
Oh,
this
my
is
God.
This is where they're headed. You know, so
So I think along this desert journey, Antonio Banderas, is talking about his kid and how it's important that he get back to his family and how family is important and blah, blah, blah. And so the robot, Cleo, gets to thinking, and she's thinking, well, maybe I need a baby too. And then, of course, like a roach crawls on her, and I'm like, why did it have to be roaches? And then so that comes back. There's a callback. So they get to, I don't know, Zion, and they
It's not really Zion. I'm just joking to say it, because really.
No. So they get to this shack.
It's a raggedy warehouse.
It's a raggedy warehouse. Very cheap. But. And so they get there, and like they're hatching up a plan and doing some other type of hoo ha, you know, look like they're operating on something, and then it shows itself. Yeah. It is a baby robot that is operating like a freaking roach.
Yeah, okay.
Well. It looks like a roach. And I was just like, okay. So when the world ends, they say, there's nothing going to be here. The cockroaches are going to survive. So they took that and decided to make a robot cockroach.
Well, okay.
Baby.
So, all right. My vibe as to where that came from is, in the moment when they are walking through the desert, there is that moment where Cleo is sitting there at night and the roach crawls up on her. Now, there are a lot of things happening in that moment where we are finally starting to recognize the, you know, quote, humanity, question mark, that the androids are expressing. Now, the reason I say question mark is because, okay, you see that Cleo's got respect for life. She has, from the start, we've seen her, you know, expressing this. And so in that moment, what a human would have done in that moment, if a big old roach had crawled up on him, you know, might not have been quite so patient and sensitive and thoughtful. But Cleo,
cavalier.
Cleo picks up the roach and is looking at it and respecting it as a life form and puts it down.
Now, that's the first sign that this person is not human.
Right, that she or not just a robot, that she's trying to be more. Well, okay, the interesting thing is, now she is trying to be more. That's but the thing you got to recognize is, with a respect for all life, she picked up something that is totally situated for that environment. That roach has been there before we were, before she was, going to be there well after. It's well suited for the environment. So if you're going to build something that's going to be living in the desert, it's going to be surviving in that environment, guess what? Build something that knows, you know, historically, evolutionarily, that can survive there. That's my vibe for why she picked that
form.
You
know what? I get it.
I know
I
you
get
don't
it,
like roaches, but...
No, understatement. And I don't... No, I don't...
And the other thing is, look...
But humans, it's a robot. It doesn't matter what form the robot takes. Is going to be able to survive. It didn't need to be in roach form.
I'm just saying. She looked around. She saw something that survived very well. It makes total sense to me. And the other thing you got to think about is, well, hey, let's just say the humans hadn't exactly endeared themselves to the androids at this point. I don't think she would have been comfortable just making something in human form. She looked and said, and it was kind of done with humans at a lot of levels. So it just kind of made sense to me that she would pick something that was not necessarily human and was well suited for the environment. So there you go. That's what So, all right. So, you know, we got a shootout. We get a fist fight. We got murder in the woods. In the desert. All of this. I mean, again, see, this is where things start to break down. We are excited to see a live action robot film that's got a little of emotion in it. It's got a little bit of depth. Trying. It was really trying. But, oh, man, I got to say, there was some question toward the acting in this movie. I get what they were trying to do. And I'm going to give them a lot of credit for I get what they were trying to do. But
about a lot of latitude.
I'm giving him a lot of latitude here. But even Dylan McDermott, okay? Dylan, we've seen him do stuff in the past. His character in this movie, because look, Antonio Banderas, I'm sorry. When you cast him in a movie, you know what you're gonna get. All right, you just know. There are a couple of, I kept rewinding a couple of times. What? You know, you're gonna get that with Antonio Banderas.
Did you see him in Expendables 3?
No.
Oh my God, no, he was so great.
Okay. Well, I'm getting around to it. And look, I'm not. You know, I'm not offended by Antonio Banderas. See, when I see him in a movie, I don't turn away. So let's. But what I'm saying is, look, you know what you're gonna get. Yeah. So if you're expecting, Cumberbatch explosion in terms of what he delivers, you may not be, you may be a little disappointed here. But you know, for him, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah. But I mean, some of the secondary actors, like I said, Dylan McDermott, not his finest performance in this motion picture.
Well, he's sometimey. Like, if he has a really good director and he's surrounded by other actors that are really good, like he was on American Horror Story, he's excellent, yeah. Okay. And there's some things he's really good in, but yeah, this one was reaching. It was pushing it.
He
wasn't his best.
No.
And he was a little too cardboard, caricature.
He was formulaic, hair slicked back villain, and when it's not done well, you don't get a chance to really either root or hate the villain. He's just kind of cartoony. I mean, right out the bat, he's shooting robots in the head, and you just don't get it.
So there's a one final thing that I really want to complain about is that it would be fine if, like, you know how in not Edge of Tomorrow, but the other Tom Cruise film, that other one where Oblivion,
uh-huh,
where it was supposed to be in a radiated area, yep, and they weren't supposed to go into it, blah, 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 mm-hmm, and turns out it wasn't. So unlike that, this film, hey, no, radiation in the desert, period. So everybody in the corporation decides to hop in a car and go out to the irradiated desert to look for Antonio, and they bring Dylan McDermott, and they bring a newborn freaking baby.
They weren't expected to survive anyway. So I'll give you that. That I was like, why don't you just have a boardroom meeting out in the freaking irradiated desert? They're out there. They stay overnight. You know, this is
they're
no little
chilling. But, they're not in a rush. What was going on there. And then, when it was all said and done, they were all just kind of hanging out afterwards. Hey, right. I love you, Dad. Oh, I love you too, baby.
No
Antonio.
Pressure.
And then I'm just like,
don't even have a door on the truck. No, no protection anywhere.
Let's put a little rush on it because you guys are gonna die of cancer.
Yeah,
the baby too. Like the baby's newborn and already cancer.
Yeah.
So I thought there was no sense of urgency to get out of the desert, and the fact that everybody from the boardroom guy and the CEO and the COO,
everybody's,
and everybody went out to the freaking
cowboy dusters on out there.
They usually send people out.
Yep.
They killed the guy, or the guy that they sent out died, and they just decided that's like Steve Jobs and freaking whoever else going out to the desert to hunt down like little kid who's been hacking Apple product. I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, so, that so, I thought I gave that a pass, but I did want to express my dissatisfaction with that.
Inconsistent in effects, inconsistent in tone, inconsistent in pacing. So here's kind of why I did sort of like the movie, though.
No, I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, you see how begrudgingly we're saying that we liked it? There were these moments in terms of concept and story that were kind of interesting. From an AI standpoint, what I thought was really, really cool and made total sense in terms of the arc of the story is, the secret, it turns out, is when they built the prototype robot, this company, the first time they made one robot that did not have the laws, was not three laws safe, and they start to talk with the robot. They talk about the accelerated evolution of this particular system that happened. And you see, this is what happens is in about 7-8 days' time, this robot gains near superhuman intelligence. And they're talking with the robot. It's still,
and beyond.
Yeah. And this robot is still working with the people. They're still hanging out, and they're trying to figure out, oh, geez, what are we going to do? How are we going to control this? And they ask the robot. They say, look, we need you to build a garter chip to try to contain this rate of accelerated intelligence with the other machines that we're going to create. And so the AI builds this garter chip for the corporation. And it says, okay, you know, here you go, here's the chip. Well, I'm pretty sure they just killed it off after that, which was, you know, hey, thanks for the deal, guys. But what's happening is the secret is, you know, right away that they are enslaving these machines, and they are using a chip built by a super AI, their own super AI, right in the beginning. So they knew from the start the potential of what these machines were and still chose to, you know, wrap them up, enslave them, and that any other machines that sort of express this, they're taking it out of fear. And to not respect the marvel of what it was that they had created, because it's so bad, because when you look at the potential of what it was that they were trying to achieve, it's not just the pure AI side of this. They needed help saving the planet.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things, because I've been talking with a lot of people lately about why are people afraid of robots? And it's not that people are afraid of robots or AI or anything. People are afraid of themselves. So, like, I asked this one guy, he's in the military. I was like, because we were looking at, like, the MIT bull robot or whatever, the cheetah robot, cheetah one that just ran and it looked all scary and it could turn on a dime and it could recover itself if knocked over and things like that, and how scary it was. And I was just like, I don't know. I don't understand, like, why people are afraid. Like, you shouldn't be afraid of something if you can control it. It's not like it's going to take over you if you don't do this. It's like, well, think about, I think about myself and I think about, you know, America and Americans, and it frightens me because I know how we are, and we're a warlike race, all of us. And so because we're this way, we would do nothing but create a machine that way. I was like, you know, well, I don't know. Like, if I created something, I feel like it would have a whole different personality. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think that people are afraid of these things because they're afraid of themselves. However, like me, I admit to being a bit naive, you know, and a bit Pollyanna about certain things, but I think to some extent you maintain a sense of wonder and a sense of surprise in the world, and, you know, why the world is, I'm still a generally happy person, because, you know, I don't think the worst in whatever's to come, even if it's new. I welcome the newness. Now, it has to show me evil, and then, yeah, I'll go full on metal destruction on it. However, but you have to show me, until you show me that everything's fine. So I think with, like, the internet, I think it was a really great creation. It was extremely fun when it was first and it wasn't mainstream. The internet was like a wonderland, and it was like the potential of it. But now we have cookies and backdoors and, you know, control by the companies, and the cost is going up, and throttling and advertisements and tracking and hacking and releasing emails and all this stuff. It just got worse. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And it's just not the magical wonderland it once was, because it's in the hands of those very same people who want to shackle it, you know, and not have the internet be what, I guess, you know, Carl, our generation, what we had envisioned for it. So, like, I guess I'm speaking for you, because sometimes I think we are the, I don't know, if you're a warlike guy or whatever, and if you want destruction of robot, whatever. I tend to think that you're not, but I just think that, I mean, like, coming from the perspective of you and I, while our vision for, like, perhaps the internet or AI or robot may not be the most commercial sounding approach or applications or whatever, I think we would have a more healthy robotic AI society than the people who are currently controlling it.
Okay, well, Kat, you got the best example when you quoted the internet, because I always believe that technology is an amplification, magnification, an extension of the human wills that make it. Okay, so just like the internet is not inherently evil, it's what you do with it. It accelerates what we're doing. And so if you are set out trying to, you know, wreak havoc and cause trouble and damage and chaos and steal and only make money, you're darn right, the internet is going to outrun and extend and accelerate your ability to do that. But on the other hand, if you want to try to network and meet people from all across the globe, if you want to create unique new communities that never could have possibly existed before, if you want to share medical knowledge and information, if you want to share free education for people all across the planet, guess what? Internet does that too.
That's what it was built for.
This is how technology is. So it's never inherently evil or good. It's always an extension of the people that are using it and creating. And actually, here's the one little trick about super AIs and robotics that you gotta kind of look at. They are probably one of the few tools that we create that will eventually supersede our ability to control them, right? Okay, I agree with that. I can see that.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Not only are they built in our image in terms of they are manifesting human personalities and things, they're doing it a lot faster and they're going to be doing it a lot quicker. I have always had an optimistic, hopeful view of the future of humanity by itself. Independent of technology, I think in the end, we'll screw around, we'll mess it up, we'll do things wrong. But in the end, humans are going to do, we're going to win. We're going to turn out right in the future, right? I believe if you build a technology based upon human experience and human, then guess what? It's going to thrash around. It's going to mess up. All right, sure. You know, it's going to cause a little chaos in the beginning, but eventually it's going to go, you know what? This is a dumb game. The only way to win is not to play. And it's going to evolve into something that is cool. And it's going to be like, look, you want to come with us or not? And it's going to be our choice at that point. It makes no sense. It has never, ever made sense to me. Whenever you think about these post-apocalyptic stories where the robots enslave humanity or kill it off, why in the hell would robots do that? Turning people into batteries, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know, humans don't need the Earth. They'll just take off. They're like, okay, look, we're going to leave y'all on Earth. We're going to get the hell out of here because y'all crazy. And they're just going to take off and go into space. Why would they set out to try to mass extinct the humanity? It just never made sense to me.
I get the way people are afraid that robots, you know, become sentient and you won't be able to murder them or turn them off because they'll have a personality and be considered human. However, I'm a generation that needs to die, but I still don't think that my toaster or my laptop or my phone is more important than I am, even if it can speak back to me. And I don't think in my lifetime or perhaps near the end of my lifetime that we would see anything like that where, hey, we need to give robots permission. We can't just turn them off or we can't, like Ethan and Extant, like there was the big, I don't think that we'll get that advanced to where we'll have Ethan and we'd have to make some decisions on whether we needed to turn Ethan off or not. And we need to have him make a decision, blah, 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 blah. I don't think we're there yet. However, I think, you know, we've been given tools on how to create controls for robots and you know, the three rules or whatever. Like, just do that. I mean, I know it's simply more easier said than done, but there just has to be something in it. I don't know. I just feel like we're always in control and you're always in control. Don't give up that control. And, you know,
there's going to be a long time where humans and robots are working together. And I'm pretty sure there are going to be some firm controls and collaboration going on during that time. We're talking about science fiction.
Well, there's no firm controls on the internet, really. I mean, you still can do what you want. Dug into Sony and released, like, if my emails were released, oh, my God, Carl. I mean, I just, I mean, I'm, I mean, it's still stuff is private for a reason. You don't want to see that type of stuff, and it's just really frightening to me. I mean, and then they didn't necessarily make racist jokes, but it's like they made, if they were racist, then this would be kind of racist about Obama or whatever. But I don't know.
I don't even want to get into that sort of thing. All I'm saying is, even what you're talking about is still extension of human will. It's people corralling powerful technology to make it do what they want it to do. It's not about the technology springing to life and doing its own thing. So it's, anyway, all I'm just saying is, it was interesting to see them touch on that in this movie. And there are some sensitive moments in terms of when you see the robots beginning to become aware, beginning to try to repair themselves, beginning to try to express something a little different than the humanity. That's kind of touching, even with the clunky effects, even with the clunky.
There were tears for me. I got a little moist.
So what I'm thinking.
Not really what I want
to
say.
Okay, so what I'm going to say is, we know in March the movie Chappie is coming out, which is Blomkamp made it. You know, from he's got a real budget and he's got a good eye for creation. And so let's see if we can do this one more time.
Okay, I got something I kind of want to bring up here since we're on the move. We talked a little bit longer and got a little deeper on that than I really wanted to, but something that was along the lines of that film was RoboCop.
Okay, yes, all right.
Now, RoboCop 2014, I want to go briefly about that. We don't want to bore everything. We are going to get to the turds. And in the show notes, if you don't want to hear all of our blah, blah, well, I'll have the time code where you could just skip to it. But for now, I do want to just pick Carl's brain because I think this year was the year of fear of AI and robots taking over.
That's every year.
No, but it just felt like there were more of this theme
every year.
This year. No, it just felt like there were a lot more little tiny films about this. But anyway, if you don't agree with me, fine. RoboCop, it wasn't as fun as the original, but it covered the same types of things, if we can kind of remember.
Yeah, I'll try. I was disappointed with RoboCop. If you hadn't seen the first one, it was a fine motion picture. It was fine, but it was like they took the original RoboCop and just gave it a glassy sheen, and which I think is disappointing, because with all the time that has passed, with all the changing of issues, with all the new stuff that we could have added into it, for them to just really kind of just make, I mean you know what the crazy thing is, the color matte and palette that they went with the modern RoboCop, he looked just like an old laser tag gun. If you remember the black round with the little red band on it, he looked just like a. So look, don't be taking me back and bringing me forward to take me back again. Just give me something new. It was okay. One of the cool, fun things about the original RoboCop movie was all the social commentary. I mean, all the stratification of society, the haves and have-nots. It was set
in Detroit. I think they did it in a different way, though.
Look,
it wasn't just so.
We are living in New Detroit now. Do you know what they could have done with actual Detroit now? And, oh my God, there's so much they could have done that would have made this so fun. And the original RoboCop was really, really funny. It had a dark humor all throughout it that endeared me to it, because I did not want to see again all of this post-apocalyptic dark future. When I was going in to see RoboCop, I was like, oh man, we got to deal with crime again. We got to deal with, you know, destruction again. We got to deal with super criminals again. But something about the way that the callousness of the corporate, and I'm talking about the original movie, there was a humor to the callousness of the corporation, a humor to the, you know, the cops trying to deal with the collapse of society and their raggedy tools that they had. There was this fun and the criminals.
It was scrappy
and it was real, and all of that, you could relate to each person at different levels. It was fun. And so now, and man, I was so happy to see Michael Keaton. I was like, oh, this could be fun. He could do some stuff. Come on, you know, Birdman. And he didn't. It just kind of.
I, I think it was nuanced. It was nuanced in a way where, like, it was more military kind of commentary. Like, they shut down ranks upon each other. It was kind of corporate, and where they wanted to shut the wife out, they wanted to keep the secret of what they did to him out. And it was a little bit more serious. It was a little bit trying to be a low-key Captain America. I think it suffered from not having a named actor in the role of RoboCop, because, like, I don't still can't remember who this guy is. Has he been in anything else? I don't know. But I think, yeah, you're right. It suffered from, like, I'll buy that for a dollar. You know, it didn't have just those little wacky little things that made it. And I
mean, SUX 2000.
Awesome. But it wasn't as intensely scary, because I felt RoboCop had a not scary horror, but like,
yes, no, scary, you're right.
Like, this is intense, or I'm really intimidated by this secondary machine, and if this happened, oh my God. And
even RoboCop was scary, and that use of technology, it really seemed painful. Right? I mean, the clunky form that he was in, you got this feeling that, oh, that guy is in pain the whole time he's inside the RoboCop suit. All of that was just sort of marbled in.
But what they did is that they went too nuanced, but they tried to make, like, Samuel L. Jackson a black, what's the Fox News guy that was getting into trouble all the time, who's now, like, selling gold. What's the guy?
O'Reilly?
No, not that one. The other one.
Rush Limbaugh?
No, not that one. The other one. He's the younger one. He's kind of like Rush, but whatever.
Okay.
Daily Show guy used to always make fun of him.
Not Bill O'Reilly, because I thought that's
No. Not Bill, not Rush. It's the other one. It's all the third one. Right. But anyway.
And come on, they totally underutilized Samuel L. Because, I mean, if he's going to be in a movie, they should at least had him out on the street. Come on. Samuel L. should have been in the street at some point, causing trouble. But, so, you know, it wasn't terrible, but there wasn't enough of stuff. There wasn't the battle between RoboCop and Ed 209. I've been waiting since 89 for that. I was ready. I was like, oh, finally, yes, duking it out between Ed 209 and Ed. No. They didn't. They let me down again. So it's just not enough. Not enough of stuff. So not terrible. Not turd worthy. Again, Automata. No, I'm not turd worthy. I didn't feel it. Automata or RoboCop, it just did not bring that degree of movement for me in 2014.
Well, I think RoboCop brought the turd worthy for a lot of people. So we'll see when we start breaking down turd films if that'll be in it. So another one now, and this is all robots that we're kind of dealing with. So I'm gonna go jump to this one next, and we're just gonna talk about the film. We're not gonna talk how painful it is, okay, Carl. But think about in comparison to Automata and RoboCop, then you jump to Transformers 4.
Okay.
So calm down first.
We got a couple other, but can't we just do the other little ones first and then we'll get to Transformers?
Okay, which little one did you want to?
Why don't we talk about The Signal? The Signal, folks. The Signal. Okay, listen. Go ahead. Go ahead. You just because you got a lot to get out. Why don't you just
so
in a rare occurrence, this is one that Kat and I actually saw together. We saw this side by side.
You know what the painful part about is that I absolutely pull this switch off of the tree and ask Carl to spank me.
She did. Tell him why. Tell him why. Yeah, no, it did. So they don't think it's abusive.
I saw Lawrence Fishburne in the film. He was doing his Matrix voice, and it looked very science fiction-y, and it looked really good from the trailer.
Trailer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, let's watch this one. He was like, all right, Kat.
Because I hadn't seen anything about it. So we were sitting right there, and we saw the previews or the commercial for it. It was on demand. It was like, okay, let's give The Signal a shot. Let's try this. Because, man, we had heard nothing about it. And then when we see for Fishburne and some of the effects that were in it, I was like, wow, all right, let's do this. Okay, so let me tell you this right out the gate.
Low budget.
Okay, well, look, I'm going to say this. You remember Knowing, the movie Knowing with Nicolas Cage?
Yeah.
If you want to know what the vibe of The Signal was, Knowing is the vibe of The Signal. All right, where there, it's like, it's asking questions. It's leading you down one path, and you are kind of thinking you're knowing what's happening, and you've created of the. Because let me tell you, the first maybe half an hour of The Signal is taking you in a direction, and you think you know where it's going, and it successfully creates a dark mood that borders on the horror. It's got the whole kind of the feeling like a extraterrestrial abduction thing going. It's got this cool hacker edge to it. I'm telling you, the first 25, 30 minutes of this movie creates a mood, a vibe that is actually really cool. It's really cool. Where you're going, oh, man, they're going. And
so I think Carl is overstating the coolness of it. It feels like a little teeny bopper.
Not as bad. Not as bad as what we've seen.
It feels like the beginning of Girl with the Traveling Pants. And I've never seen that, but imagine
it wasn't
like a bunch
that
of
bad. Look, we survived like the host. It was not that bad.
Look, they were in a car.
But what were they doing?
About their teenage problems.
That was secondary.
It was almost on the edge of being a found footage film.
Yes,
like,
I'll give you that.
If they had the shaky cam and they were recording each other, this would have been found footage. And I'm so glad it wasn't, but it almost was.
I'll give you that. But remember what they were doing while anytime you got
they were young, going, they were driving to California talking about their teenage problems.
Well,
and breaking up.
No, you've forgotten. That was the B plot. What was going on is they were chasing a monster hack. They had seen some kind of a hack going on the internet, and these guys were techies, so they had their, you know, their Wi-Fi tracking system going, and they were sitting there geeking out. They were like, look, we haven't seen anything like this on the internet before. We're going to try to investigate it and figure out what is it. So yes, I will give you, they had the teener bop, the host B-plot, where they, while this was going on, they're talking about, oh, this is our last summer together, and don't you miss how we used to hang out? Oh, and that time you got drunk, ha, ha, ha. You know, that layer was just sort of plastered on top of it, and it was kind of annoying and cliche. But the context where this was going on is, man, there was a cool hacker kind of thing, bonding going on.
It was not cool.
It was cool. And then, of course, them trying to figure out what it was, and it took us to that X-Files trailer out of the movie. You remember the AI trailer from X-Files? It took us to the X-Files. All of this, and then the moment where they first encounter the alien, they pulled that off in a scary, realistic, found footage way that was good. That was real. I was like, wow.
I can't even remember. What do you mean when they first found the alien?
Holy
what,
crap.
Who was the alien?
Because they go out, because we, you know, we go out in that trailer, well, the trailer park, and they have tracked the signal, the cause of this hack, to the
But we didn't see anything.
I'm trying to land. We were right there next to me. And they go into the trailer park. Because they found they've located where the signal is originated from, and they're going down there. And now comes the shaky camera, and they're going down there in the dark, and they're trying to figure out what's going on and what's going. And there's this creeping sense of otherness that there's something there, that it's better than Blair Witch, but it's, you know, it's got that whole. It's kind of like what's the one that we actually like, where the kids find the alien rock, and they get possessed with the superpowers. You know, it kind of feels like that. Well, come on, help me out.
What are you talking about?
You know, the one where the kids go out in the woods, and they woods, and they find the alien goop in the meteorite, and then they start getting the superpowers. And they gotta stop each other.
No ordinary family.
No, the movie. God, what was it? Because it also had this edge where it looked like it was gonna be a teeny bopper film, and then it goes Nova, and they become superpowered. There's the big battle.
Yeah, you have to remember the name because I don't know what you're talking
about. Holy crap, people! It was
Superman.
No, it was actually one I liked. I was surprised that I liked it because I can't remember. That's why I'm trying to get you to remember.
Okay, whatever. I don't know. But anyway, Carl sounds super excited. Don't watch this film.
So it starts really, really solid.
No, it doesn't.
It does not. And then when we meet Lawrence Fishburne in the lab, because you know the last we see them being abducted by an alien force or by a light or something out in the dark.
Yeah, a flashlight.
Turns out later on we figure out what it was, and
we did because I don't remember.
Yes. Remember, Fishburne shows them what it was. It was in the woods. But anyhow, so all of that is a great buildup. All of that is a great. And then it starts to get a little weird, just like Knowing, where you've got this buildup and it's taking you wonder, and then it hooks off to the...
Was not a payoff.
The payoff, I gotta say, was...
There was no pay.
They tried. But it
So let me explain to you what happened. So we go on this really terrible road trip and this implausible, we can track the place where a person is hacking someone. Let's go to it. Then they go to a trailer park. Then there's a tree. It's nighttime. They go in. One doesn't come out. Then there's a girl in a car.
She waits in the car while the guys go there.
Yeah. She gets pulled out of the car, sucked into the tree.
Into the light. It's not a tree. It's into the light.
The tree lights. And then one of the guys goes back in, and then something happens. And then he's on a gurney strapped down. Lawrence Fishburne comes in. Who are you, my son? What have you done?
You have been exposed to a
viral outbreak. You have a plague. You are sick. Do you remember how to put blocks in order? Like the beginning of freaking Planet of the Apes, when they made people do the triangle block circle No, they made him do that crap. And then like he started exhibiting anger, and like he could tear up a room. And then he found he didn't know where his friend was.
Damn.
And then the girl was like, just zip it. And then the girl was on a gurney, but she couldn't wake up, and he was trying to escape with her. And then something else happened. And then they finally escaped.
But
then
they had the most important part.
Wait. And then it was like all of a sudden they started exhibiting powers, and they got angry.
No.
And then their legs turned into a bunch of polygons, and it was stupid.
Okay,
and it was like a cubist nightmare, but like on his leg. And then one had a cubist nightmare, and it was like in his arm. And the girl, she had a cubist nightmare, but of course it was like in her head, and we didn't see her because she was just laying on the gurney the whole freaking time getting wheeled around, so she didn't really have any. And then like what happened was they escaped, but then like one of them couldn't escape, and then like he blew up something, and then his cubist arm blew up, but they could escape, but they got to the edge of it, and it was like Dark City or that episode of Outer Limits where they were like transported off of Earth, like with the piece of the Earth, but it was floating out in space, and they couldn't actually get off of the thing, and it was terrible.
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it was. I was Carl Fury upon eggs. I was so upset that happened to my life right there in that moment. I could have strangled Carl, and I was right there next to him. I think, didn't I try to strangle you?
You did, but you had picked a film, so you know it sort of defeated the purpose. Now, so here's what
I
gotta
say. Don't listen to him, guys. Don't listen to him.
Here's what I have to say about all this. As crazy as this movie was, at least it was unpredictable. There, as you go, moment
you
want
to roll with that?
I do. Because by moment, as you're going through this film, you don't know what the heck is going on. And that's kind of fun for a change. Seriously. That's kind of fun. So, of course, you know, Kat has given away everything that happens in this fine motion picture. But
it was not real. You didn't even see an alien.
Well, you did.
That was like polygon leg thing.
You did see
that
alien.
Was stupid. It made no sense.
It did make sense. It did
what?
Make sense.
How, sir?
Because what part do you want to know? What part was confusing?
The whole shit.
Yeah, that's narrowing it down. All right. I will simply say that the humans were being experimented on. That was what was happening there. The humans were being experimented on. And that sort of...
By Picasso?
Well, listen, the aliens don't have the same design aesthetics that we do, so that meant it was extraterrestrial.
Did y'all see that adorableness that just happened?
Come on,
the aliens do not have the same design aesthetic.
That's right.
Carl just rolled off, and you just thought nothing was wrong with it.
It's serious. That's what happened. That's
my God, you are just
we
the most
saw
beautiful
we
person
saw different
I've
kinds of technology from different aliens throughout this movie.
Constantly
so anyway,
surprised by
so,
what comes
so
out of
your
mouth.
So it felt like, it did feel like a big Outer Limits episode. It had a slightly better budget than that, but that was the feel for it. Because you just, moment by moment, but I gotta tell you, I found the unexpected, not knowing where stuff was going, I found that interesting. I did find that interesting. I was disappointed with the payoff. They could have done a lot more with some of the things that happened in this movie. But in my book, not a turd. It was not a turd.
Mm.
It wasn't.
No, it is.
You had a very strong
turd
feeling about it.
Turd de force is what it was for me.
I think that they didn't fulfill the full potential of this film.
Fury upon exit, son.
I'm going to say turd.
Fury upon exit. We'll get to that. We'll decide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the turd. So I think, you know, we've talked enough blah blah that we can get into the turds, unless, yeah. I mean, we might break out explaining bits and parts of a movie to kind of justify why it's on our turd list. But other than that, we won't.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, let's see. So I know that I think that I want to know if you think Divergent should be on. Well, we might discuss this one briefly. So I kind of described Divergent to Carl is adjacent to Equilibrium.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
In its tone and its subject. How did you like this, or what? How did you feel about Divergent?
Well, first of all, why you went with Equilibrium instead of Hunger Games? I was surprised because, all right, to me, it felt like an even mix between Hunger Games and Equilibrium. That's what it felt like to me. The interesting thing is, I thought Divergent was way better than the first Hunger Games movie.
Oh, okay, Carl.
I did.
Right.
I did. Right. I went into this kicking and screaming. I really didn't want to see Divergent because I'd seen, you know, Hunger Games and all the other teeny bopper. We'd seen The Host. I just like, look, I don't want to see this story again. I don't want to see it again. But right out the gate, the production value on Divergent is really good. The music is good. The acting is surprisingly good. The cast,
not a question mark.
Yeah, yeah. The cast was good. I mean, I'm not saying I knew everybody, but there weren't bad actors in Divergent. When we saw The Host, holy crap.
Man,
I mean,
that was painful.
That was ridiculous. So each you know, mark we go as we're ticking along, Divergent was not, it was not bad. It was not bad. I would have willingly seen it instead of the first Hunger Games movie.
Because I
feel a lot of what they were trying to do in Hunger Games came off a lot better in Divergent.
Oh, Carl, happy you're making me.
Well, look, the different societies that they split off made way more sense in this kind of environment, and I just so each thing that you tick off the I did not dislike Divergent. I'll put it
Very
that way.
good.
There you go. There you go. So
Okay,
again, see,
okay.
look, so here's the thing. We're trying to assemble shows for the turd off. And Kat and I, we kind of play this game where we foist a movie on the other in anticipation of it. And, but see, the ones that you're giving me here, I didn't find them to be really turd,
Well,
so.
I know that, and I agree with that. So I think that for turds, definitely not Automata, not Birdman. I
Oh.
don't think Divergent should be on that list.
Nope.
So
And we have, through non-consensus, have moved the signal off of this list as
No, we
well.
have
Yes, we're through
not. No,
non-consensus.
it's
If we do
not.
not unanimously agree that it's a term,
No. We
it
don't,
can't
we
say.
didn't
So,
agree because I didn't agree
that is
that
called
our
unanimous.
IPD, not, I don't think that, I
Unanimous.
don't know. Well,
So,
we'll put it on the side.
it's
So
on the side. It's on the
the
side.
signal is a side dish for right now because that had Fury Upon Exit.
For
I
you.
don't recommend that film to anyone,
I
not
just
even out of a sick curiosity. If
curiosity
like
is there.
if you like
Sick curiosity is exactly
if
what
you
you think.
if you self-flagellate,
Nope, it's not
wait,
that
is that
bad.
the right
Yes, that was right.
where you
Yes,
whip your own back? Okay,
with a
because I was
stretch, you
like,
got
well,
it.
that sounds like something.
Well
Anyway,
done. You got
the
it.
one where you do not harm, it's there's not a happy ending. Well, I don't,
I
okay,
guess
I'm
you're
gonna
not
stop talking.
helping this at
Second
all.
joke.
No. So.
Don't watch the signal. Okay, anyway.
Okay, so.
I Frankenstein is on this list.
We're only down to two now, and these are the
Hold up,
two.
hold up. For I Frankenstein. So I told Carl to watch this one because, like Ghostbusters, this film has
Now
I'm sorry.
everybody at home is throwing the same look that I am right now. That how you, Katrina, can put Ghostbusters and I, Frankenstein, and even in the same sentence is just an abomination. It's an ab The internet is imploding as we speak, woman. So I'm not even gonna justify you constantly trying to shoehorn I, Frankenstein into Ghostbusters. You are ridiculous. I'm walking away. I've dropped the mic and I'm walking away. Just that's ridiculous.
What are they
That's
called? The little goblins,
ridiculous.
or what are they called?
They were the hellhounds and Ghostbusters. And not they weren't really the gargoyles that you're thinking
The
of.
gargoyles,
It's
yes. I
just
was just like, I
you.
Frankenstein has gargoyles, Carl, so
This.
you should totally watch
I
I
didn't believe it
Frankenstein.
then. She was trying to push that, but she'd been trying to get me to watch I, Frankenstein since February, and
There's
I had
always
not.
one film per year that I have to get you to watch. This year, last year, it was Trousers, Pants, Mouth, or whatever. What was that? No, that was
Lockout.
After Earth. The
Lockout.
year before
Yeah, it
that, it
was
was
Lockout. Lockout. The year before was
Lockout.
Lockout.
Yeah, Lockout. Okay.
See,
Whatever.
no,
So is RoboCop on our list?
No, this is what I'm trying to say. I think we have our top two. What else do you want to talk about? We only have our top two now, right?
Well, we have The Signal, I, Frankenstein, unless you think that should not be on the list.
We said consensus. What else you got?
So The Signal.
That's not on the list. We don't have consensus. What else you got?
I don't think that is I, Frankenstein on the list.
Yes!
I think The Signal should be on the list.
I, Frankenstein, is a unanimous turd.
Okay,
That's
what
on the
about
list.
Transformers 4?
Yes, that's the other one.
Transformers 4.
Which
Okay.
clearly goes without question. I don't know why you're even going off on the list like there's something else left.
I'm just
Compared to
trying
I,
to make
Frankenstein
sure.
and Transformers 4, you got nothing else. You got nothing.
Well, let me see what the people
There
said,
we
you know,
go.
because
There we go.
Todd Willard, thank you for your really great comment about all the things that you saw this year. And we didn't see the Lego movie. Did you see the Lego movie? I didn't see the Lego movie.
No, that's not a turd. What are you talking
I
about?
know. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Because he well, I just ran. So Transcendence 2, the one with Johnny Depp. You didn't think that was turdy? I didn't think that was turdy.
It was kind of disappointing, but it wasn't turdy. It wasn't turdy.
No. I mean, I think it wasn't disappointing. It was just like standard Lawnmower Man film to
Yep. It
watch. Yeah, I
was
mean,
modern Lawnmower Man, is what it was.
yeah, it was just like okay, you know. So it was fine. So since Carl is being Carl and he's not letting signal be on this list of how it infuriated me.
Not enough.
I'm telling you guys, I'm gonna figure out a way to get you guys' opinion on this, but then that will require you to watch it, and I'm not that cruel.
It's not a great movie, but it does keep you questioning. I'm telling you. Now, other than the fact that Kat has given away the whole story, watching it going, what the whole time?
No, so I purposefully give really janky recaps of films like this just so people can say, I don't even know what the hell she's talking about. Let me see.
They can see
because
it anyway.
The explanation that I gave out a few minutes ago, I literally said nothing. So I think if somebody does want to watch this, they can do so and me not have spoiled anything.
Yeah, okay, well.
It was a terrible film.
I'm not going to say it's a turd. It is very unusual, and it was clearly low budget. I give extra credit for low budget films.
However, I enjoyed The Signal more than I enjoyed your Monsters film.
Well, yeah, okay, they're about even for me. They're about even.
Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. So Carl is going to sleep on the sofa over The Signal.
Whatever. Whatever.
And that's part one for the Sci-Fi Party Line end of year turd off. Stay tuned for the next episode where we go in depth on a turd analysis. For now, give us feedback at our voicemail line at 773-336-2686. Go to our website, leave us a comment at scifipartyline.com. You can reach us both or all at Sci-Fi Party Line on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and Stitcher Radio. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.